is up? It's the Pro Football Focus Fantasy Podcast. My name is Jeff Rackliff, and it's Thursday, May 16th. Welcome into the big show here. Got a lot to talk to you about on the show today. I'm going to dive right in, actually, with something that occurred based on last weekend. So I did a guest spot on a friend's podcast last Saturday, and the topic of Baker Mayfield came up, which to me is a very interesting topic for a number of reasons. I mean, hey, let's face it, Baker right now is very infectious, and he's infectious for a number of reasons. We know he's got the moxie, right? He's got the on-the-field ability. He's got the surrounding talent. And the stars seem to align for Baker Mayfield to have, I don't even think we can say a breakout season because dude already broke out, but an ascending season or an ascendant season potentially here. However, I have some concerns. Now, in today's era, in the social media era where everybody's trying to be hot takey, I know that sometimes some of the things that I can say may come across that way. And I mean, hey, sometimes there has to be a voice of reason ultimately, but I'm not just saying things to get clicks. I'm not a Colin Coward type person. Everything that I say has a basis, has a foundation, has a root in the research that I'm doing to produce the content, audio, video, written for Pro Football Focus. And something I said on this podcast was I expected touchdown regression from Baker Mayfield. Now, people ran with that one, and I think it deserves to be explained. When I say regression, regression doesn't mean a decline in performance from last year. Regression has, it could have two directions. You could have upward regression, you could have downward regression, because regression in mathematics means moving to the mean, right? Moving to the average performance. And over a long enough period of time, everything regresses to the mean. Now, unfortunately, an NFL player's career, from a sample size standpoint, even if it's a long career, isn't necessarily a long enough period of time. But ultimately, we could still expect regression regardless of whoever we're talking about. So with Baker Mayfield, I'm not saying I expect fewer than 27 touchdown passes out of him this year, which is what he had last year. I'm expecting his rate to decrease slightly. And that slight decrease in rate is where I think a lot of people are going to get bitten with Baker Mayfield, right? The expectation is that his arrow is pointing up and it's just going to continue to point up forever. And we should learn our lesson from various places. I mean, hey, the 2017 Bitcoin craze. Everybody thought Bitcoin was going up forever. Eventually, yeah, it didn't go up forever and it went down. Now, I'm not saying Baker Mayfield's going to crash like that, but the point is simple. No player out there continually increases in production year over year over year over year. And when you get off to such a high level of production, you're going to see inevitably some decline in certain rate stats. I mean, Deshaun Watson is a prime example of this. This is a guy who last year I warned, I said, hey, we're taking a small sample size. We took like essentially a handful of games, what, five games essentially, really, and half a season's worth overall for Deshaun Watson, but really five games of production. And all of a sudden, he was the next big thing in fantasy football. He was the number two quarterback being drafted last year. And I said he was being overdrafted. Now, that wasn't saying I don't like Deshaun Watson. It was saying you're spending too much for Deshaun Watson, right? And ultimately, hey, I mean, the dude finished as the, what, quarterback four or five, depending on your scoring system, and yet he did regress. He didn't finish as the number two quarterback, and ultimately people who bought in on him there paid too much. And it's just like any investment. When you pay too much on an investment, it's not a good thing for your overall portfolio. So that brings us to Baker Mayfield. When I say I expect regression out of Baker Mayfield, it doesn't mean I don't like Baker Mayfield. In fact, I love me some Baker Mayfield. I just don't like the price of Baker Mayfield right now. You know, it's the same thing like, you know, buying stocks. Hey, I love Apple. But if the price of Apple's at like a 52-week high, I'm not going to buy Apple. I'm just not going to. And right now, Baker Mayfield's price is at a 52-week high. Dude's going as the number four quarterback. Early fifth-round pick. Mahomes is going late second. Rodgers and Luck mid-fourth, then Baker. He is going ahead of Deshaun Watson. He's going ahead of Matt Ryan, who was the number two fantasy quarterback last year. Four rounds ahead of Jared Goff, who was a top six fantasy quarterback in most scoring systems last year. He's going five rounds ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, and I get it, Ben lost AB, but still, five rounds ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, who was a 5,000-yard passer last year, the number three fantasy quarterback in a lot of systems, maybe even the number two. We're overpaying for Baker. I'm not saying Baker's going to have a bad season. In fact, you know, I believe Baker is top 8, 9, you know, right in that range. I've gone back and forth. I currently have him at 9. I've had him at 8. It's one of those things with ranking updates. I think that's fine. He's a QB1. He's an every week fantasy starter. But is he a fifth round pick? No, he isn't. And, you know, even when you look at average points per game, like if he continued on last year, so we see no regression from a points per game standpoint. If you average it out to 16 games, it's still only going to be good enough essentially for about an eighth or ninth place finish, which is not a bad thing. It is not. I know Browns fans were at me like crazy over this. I wasn't saying anything bad about Baker. I'm just saying our expectations get a little too high, especially when it comes to the replication of touchdown productivity. I think when we look at quarterbacks, touchdowns will have fluctuation from year to year. But if you look at yards, that's where they can be more consistent. You know, your yards per attempt is typically going to be more consistent, more sticky year over year than your touchdown rate. And just to be clear on this as well, I expect touchdown regression from Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the guy threw 50 touchdown passes last year. It's not a knock on Mahomes, but right now on my draft board, which by the way, I'm already starting to put that together, putting the beginning pieces in place for the 2019 PFF Fantasy Playbook. I have a fifth round grade right now on Patrick Mahomes. He's never going to last until the fifth round, but that's the proper value on my board for where this guy should be taken. And this can come into play. You know, I'm actually in a mock draft right now for PFF where I was able to get Andrew Luck in, I believe it was the eighth round. Yeah, I took Andrew Luck in the eighth round. I have a sixth round grade on Andrew Luck, and was happy to take him in the eighth round, you know, balancing value out with availability in that particular draft. The results, I know a lot of people are interested in that. This is a mock draft of death. There are some big names in this. Evan Silva, Mike Clay, John Paulson, Michael Fabiano, and a couple of the PFF guys. I mean, it is just a murderer's row. It's a great mock draft, super challenging. And once that the draft is complete, I'll actually review some of my observations there. I mean, long story short, you know, the too long didn't read. Running backs go early, like crazy early, like wow early. Wide receiver value is going to be there. This is an industry league, so quarterbacks fall a little bit further than they should. And I have not cracked the code just yet. I got to do more mocks and more best ball drafts. Haven't cracked the code for how to really effectively attack tight end just because it is so tricky. I took Vance McDonald in the 10th round of this thing. I'm dabbling with that. Like, where's the breaking point where I'll still feel comfortable? Because I don't know. I mean, I'd love to spend an early pick on one of the big three. But man, those early picks are so valuable at running back right now. You can get good value at wide receiver. I mean, you're getting fair market value for the tight ends where you're taking them in the top three. You know, you're essentially taking them in the second and third rounds. Those top three guys of Kittle, Kelce, Ertz, Kelce, Kittle, Ertz in that order. Anyway, I'll talk more about that when that gets released. But I did want to, you know, basically, I'm not knocking Baker Mayfield. Because it's never a do not draft thing, and that's a great mindset to have. We shouldn't be looking at it like, do not draft this guy. Must not draft this guy. We're not going to be robotic about it, right? We can't draft this guy unless we're getting proper value. Like, if you reach, you let value fall down the board. If you didn't listen to my last podcast from last week, I talked about this strategy in the Dynasty Rookie Draft that's going on right now for SiriusXM. It's actually almost done. Super challenging league, 16-teamer, and, you know, if you let value fall down the board, you give an advantage to your opponents. Well, anytime you reach for a player and you draft him where, you know, where he's sort of ahead of value or maybe way ahead of value on your board, you're letting other players who should be going at, in that range fall to your opponents and thus giving them an advantage, right? I know we're all fans. We all come from that background or else we wouldn't be playing this game. But in the same right, you don't necessarily have to have all the players that you're fans of on your fantasy team. You have to put together the team that's going to win, you know, ultimately win your leagues. So that, I mean, that's a, it's a bit of a separation from a mindset standpoint that we have to take in these things, but it ultimately works out well. So again, not a knock on Baker. I love me some Baker. I'm just not going to draft him in the fifth round. And I think if people are considering him there, they're sacrificing value. They're sacrificing value elsewhere. I think, you know, and by the way, where would I be comfortable drafting Baker? Right now, my draft board has a ninth round grade on Baker Mayfield. And I know people will say, oh, you industry people, you always undervalue quarterbacks. I think the masses are starting to catch up to that a little bit more. But the hyper home leagues, the folks who don't pay attention from like the Super Bowl until 5 minutes before their draft. But that, you know what I'm talking about, until like the 4th of July. Those leagues, yeah, quarterbacks are still going to go early. But regardless, yes, it may seem like I'm undervaluing. But eventually you get to a point where the value falls at quarterback because all of the knuckleheads in your league who are going to draft a quarterback early have already done so. And then there's a whole bunch of guys that just sit there, you know, and when I look at this list, like, yes, I have a ninth round grade on Baker. He may not get there. I also have a ninth round grade on Jared Goff. He very likely could. I have a 10th round grade on Carson Wentz. He could easily be there in the 10th round. You know, Jameis Winston, you know, like a guy like that who I have an 11th round grade on, he could be there. He's sort of sexy though, so maybe he's not the best example. But guys like that, I have a 13th round grade on Lamar Jackson. If Lamar is there in the 13th round of a 12-teamer, I'm taking him every time and doing my safe and upside. I might even bump that up. These are still in flux a little bit, just getting the earliest pieces in place for this draft board, which of course you'll be able to get with the Fantasy Playbook, which will go live right in the beginning of July. We don't have a date set on the calendar, an official date for the release, but it's right, you know, typically right around 4th of July is when we launch all of our fantasy product. Depends on what day of the week everything falls, but a little insight there behind the curtain. Anyway, so just something that came up there that I thought I would bring up. A few other things that I wanted to note here on the show today. First and foremost, we're hearing the 49ers not going to be featured on Hard Knocks. So if you've been doing the math and following along, there are certain teams who are exempt and all that. But then essentially right now, the list has whittled down to three teams: the Raiders, the Lions, and the Redskins. And I think it's pretty obvious which team we would want out of them. Not the Lions. No thanks. And really not the Redskins. I mean, come on, can we get some Raiders here? I love this guy, this Antonio Brown guy coming in the building. Oh, come on, baby. Can we get the Raiders? That would be awesome. I love me some Hard Knocks. And of course, we have the Carolina Panthers for All or Nothing, which I was afraid that was going away. It hadn't heard much about it. And I believe the last few years, it was an April release, like a late April release. Might have been May. I can't honestly remember, but that's a good one too. It's so cool to see the documentary style behind the scenes of these teams. And, you know, maybe the Panthers aren't the sexiest, but they're far from the worst option that we've seen in years. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, sort of what happens. I love seeing the characters, you know, essentially that emerge, you know, these maybe lesser known names on depth charts who have great personalities or great stories or whatever it is, and just getting to see what things are like behind the scenes is just so cool. So come on, Raiders. Come on, NFL. Do the right thing here. Let's get the Raiders on Hard Knocks. It won't be the Jets, although this would have been interesting to see the behind the scenes because, of course, Mike Maccagnan is now out as the general manager, which is typically not the way that these things are done. You typically don't fire a general manager after free agency in the draft, but you do you, Jets. You do you. So Adam Gase is the acting general manager. And there's been a lot of rumblings out of this. I mean, one of the big things here, and this coming from Manish Mehta, who sometimes listens to this podcast. If you're listening, shout out to you, Manish. But anyway, that Gase didn't want to sign Le'Veon Bell. This was one of those things that I had actually kind of discussed. You know, hey, I'm a fantasy guy, gambling, DFS, all of that. But I know a thing or two about how the NFL works and prioritizing old running backs. I mean, you don't even have to know a thing or two to realize that that's just not the way the league is right now. And typically these teams who give out big contracts to positions that aren't necessarily... that you don't have to give big contracts out to, right? You give a big contract out to a quarterback, I get it. An edge rusher, I get it. A left tackle, I get it. Even a corner, like a shutdown corner, I get it. A running back in this era, like, it's not a knock on Le'Veon Bell, but couldn't we cobble together with Eli McGuire and Trenton Cannon and maybe somebody else? Couldn't we cobble something together then instead of sinking all this money into it? I mean, it makes sense. And it's not surprising Adam Gase wouldn't want to bring Bell into the building. I mean, but in the same right, now that he's there, he's going to be used. So I'm not worried about this for fantasy purposes. It's just, can we turn dysfunctionality into functionality? Like, that's what the Jets obviously need to do here. They have some exciting pieces in place on this team, but can we right the ship? And I mean, the previous regime who Gase was with didn't necessarily seem to be able to do that. So we shall see, but it's not going to be a downgrade for me on Le'Veon Bell. Christian McCaffrey, talking about his conditioning, says that he has gotten way stronger.
I lift things up and put them down.
Yes, he has. He's done that a lot, apparently, this offseason. The whole knock on him with the size thing coming out of college, I mean, the dude's jacked, absolutely jacked, and he's focused on his speed as well. You know, sometimes we'll see these guys put on muscle, they'll lose not even a half step, but like a quarter of a step, which in the NFL is significant, right? No, I'm not worried about Christian McCaffrey. If anything, I mean, he was so ridiculous down the stretch that we could expect a little regression from that. But I mean, come on, dude's a top four option. And honestly, I don't think there's, like, this is the debate, and maybe we'll have to flesh this out. This might be a good July topic once we get a little bit more info under our belts, but like, who is the number one? And there's no clear answer to that question. And could you take Christian McCaffrey one overall? Yeah. Am I going to do it? No. But I wouldn't, you know, if you said to me, hey, I just believe in McCaffrey, I think the situation plus his ability as a receiver out of the backfield, blah, 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 blah. And you say, I'm going to take him number one overall in my PPR league, I'm not going to talk you out of it. I don't think that there's a clear-cut gap between, you know, those top four basically now. So you're talking Saquon, McCaffrey, Zeke, and Kamara. I don't think there's a clear cut. One of these guys is way better than the other. It's not like, you know, how a lot of people felt about Todd Gurley last year. I don't see that this year. So this is an interesting one, and he's definitely getting bigger. Speaking of running backs, Matt Breida saying that all three running backs are going to be used a lot in San Francisco, assuming here that he's meaning himself, hopefully, Jerick McKinnon and Tevin Coleman. I still believe that Tevin Coleman is the favorite to lead that backfield in carries. Jerick McKinnon will lead it in catches, and Breida will be the three. You know, he's going to be sprinkled in more than maybe other threes, but not enough to really be anything more than a in case of emergency break glass type of guy. The Athletic, Stephen Holder over there, said that the offseason's been a vote of confidence for Marlon Mack. I see you. Yeah, I agree 100%. When essentially the biggest piece that you brought into that backfield is Spencer Ware, they didn't address during the draft. I mean, even last year they addressed, you know, Jordan Wilkins, and some people thought, well, maybe this could be one of those day three guys who makes an impact. And maybe, you know, hey, the post-draft haze that we all get into, and a lot of these prospects look better than what they're ultimately going to be, could have been at play there. But I think there was a viable case to be made. And the same right, though, he never really did much. Marlon Mack did a lot last year, especially down the stretch. You have to, right now, be considering Marlon Mack at least a mid-range RB2. And I think he's better than a mid-range RB2. And I'll tell you what, current ADP is not saying that about Marlon Mack, which is actually really interesting right now. That mock draft that I talked about, Marlon Mack went, he went way later than I expected. He, you know, you're talking fourth round. I mean, if you can get Marlon Mack in the fourth round, do it all day long. I have a third round grade on him right now. I think he should be just outside of the RB1s, but really at the front end of the RB2s. And, you know, that's just a good situation in general for him. Josh McDaniels talking about their offense post-Gronk, saying not really sure what the offense is going to look like. I think we have an indication, though, that they're going to run the football a lot. I mean, this is what this team does. They will reinvent themselves every single year. They don't need a system and then players to fit the system. They're going to draft players and then fit the system around players. They're going to sign free agents and bring in, you know, other, you know, this is a team that isn't afraid to trade. They're going to bring in players and fit the system around the players who they have. They do not have a Hall of Fame tight end on their roster any longer. So they're probably not going to be using the tight end position a lot. And then when you look at it, they have a loaded backfield. Loaded. Now, it's not like there's a rock star in that backfield, but there's a lot of talent in that backfield. You know, one of the best pass-catching running backs in the NFL in James White. You have a good early down guy in Sony Michel. And not great, but good. You have Rex Burkhead, a versatile Swiss Army knife in the backfield. You have Damian Harris, who could be another Sony Michel, or maybe, you know, Sony Michel with a little bit of chops catching the ball out of the backfield. I mean, there's so much possibility there. I would expect him to run the heck out of the football. Also, you have a quarterback who's getting up there in age. He already got up there. Who am I kidding? He's already up there in age. It makes a lot of sense. Couple quarterback situation to update. It does look like we're going to see a straight-up battle between Josh Rosen and Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami. They're going to split reps during OTAs. It'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. Fitzpatrick has the potential to hold off Rosen in the short term, but let's face it, once we get into the season and Fitzpatrick becomes Fitzpatrick, where it's a little bit of magic and then a little bit of, oh my God, who is this guy under center? Then eventually I think Rosen will take over. I think it is really interesting, and I did see a prop bet out there as to whether or not Rosen would be under center in week one as the starter. So we'll keep an eye on that one. I still like Rosen's long-term outlook in Dynasty. I do not like the short-term, and I do think it's going to take a little bit of time for him to become anything in Dynasty. The Redskins are going to have an open competition at quarterback. Jay Gruden saying as much. He said Case is coming off of the most experience. Colt McCoy has the most experience with the terminology, and Dwayne Haskins was the 15th pick in the draft, so we'll see what happens. There's a chance Haskins could win the job, and that would not be shocking. I am not high on Case Keenum. And yes, Colt McCoy, Gruden loves him because, yes, he knows the terminology. But when you look at it from a pure talent standpoint, Dwayne Haskins is the most talented. That doesn't necessarily guarantee he'll be under center in week one, but you have to view him as the number two quarterback for Dynasty in this year's class, and I don't think it's particularly close. How about this? So the Bengals drafted a tight end in the second round by the name of Drew Sample, which was a bit of a head-scratcher, and I have seen some folks who've kind of moved Drew Sample up their rookie rankings. I didn't, because that doesn't really fit what Drew Sample did at the college level. And it's interesting, Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback saying that the Bengals are using Sample as the Y tight end and Tyler Eifert as the F. So if you're not familiar with the terminology, Y would be the inline blocking tight end. The F would be the move, like the pass catching tight end. The way that you could, you know, another place you could see this, remember the head coach coming from that LA system with the Rams, Tyler Higbee is the Y, Gerald Everett is the F. So if Tyler Eifert was able to stay healthy, boy, I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. But if he's able to stay healthy, that could be a productive spot. We'll see, man. We will see with Tyler Eifert. But that's at least how they're using things right now. Dan Campbell talking about Jared Cook down there in New Orleans. And he's going to say the team's going to use him to do what he does best. And, I mean, this is a good situation for Jared Cook. I mean, this is not Drew Brees passing for 5,000-plus yards every year. But it's still Drew Brees, and Drew Brees still looking very good. It's a very favorable situation for Cook. You know, when you look at that depth chart, they didn't add any receivers. They didn't draft any. You know, there's no big names who they brought in. So it's Michael Thomas, obviously Kamara out of the backfield. Cook has a prime opportunity to see plenty of targets here. I like him as one of those sort of after the first 6-7 tight ends come off the board, you start looking at Jared Cook. Essentially, we know the big three. Then I think you have to consider there's a tier of four after that. And any which way you have these guys, Hunter Henry, OJ Howard, Evan Ingram, and then Eric Ebron. Once those guys go off the board, I think you have to be looking at Jared Cook. Just given the role in the offense, given the state of the position, he's a good situation. I don't think there's enough juice there to put him in that next tier of four, but he's right on the edge of it, really, really close. And that's good to hear out of Dan Campbell there. By the way, it does look like Doug Baldwin will officially be retiring here, at least as Twitter indicates from him. So, you know, we already talked about it, but a fond farewell to Doug Baldwin. Manny Sanders not expecting to return until mid-July. I do have to warn folks, he could be on the pup, okay? And there's some love building in the fantasy industry for Deshaun Hamilton. Sometimes with these sorts of things, you have to be careful because there's a tendency in this industry for some analysts to just sort of go nuts over certain players that they love. But the difference between an analyst and a casual drafter is that while the analyst is doing that and they're like professing their love for this player, they're not saying like, I love Deshaun Hamilton, therefore I'm drafting him in the second round, right? They're saying, I love Deshaun Hamilton and I seem to be getting him in every draft. And I'm getting him around before essentially everybody else starts looking at him or something along those lines. That's what's being said. But what often happens is casual fantasy players will hear that and they'll say, no matter what, I have to do whatever I can to get Deshaun Hamilton and then end up drafting him. I've been in drafts in home leagues where guys will get drafted 4 or 5 rounds before they should go because this like build up, this crescendo in the fantasy industry. So just be careful with Deshaun. I think he's going to be the top target when Manny Sanders is out, but when Sanders comes back, Deshaun goes back to essentially being the number three, which is not going to be a favorable role in that offense with Joe Flacco under center. Les Snead, speaking of players that people are going nuts over, Les Snead talked about Daryl Henderson saying, gives the team a little Alvin Kamara element. Okay, well, pump the brakes just a second here. Yes, he has that sort of skill set. Is he Alvin Kamara? No. He doesn't have the thump that Alvin Kamara has to his game, but he does have the explosive upside that Alvin Kamara has to his game. So there's that. But there are some industry pundits out there who are kind of pushing all their chips in on Daryl Henderson, and I'm not necessarily convinced. I mean, if you're talking gives them the Alvin Kamara element, what does that mean? Does that mean that you have this game-breaking elite-level athlete who's so unique in the NFL, you know, from you know what he can do? Or are you talking about you have a guy who's a complementary piece, which is how Alvin Kamara was initially viewed, who's a complementary piece who gives you that spark to go with your other guy, Todd Gurley or Mark Ingram? I mean, I don't think anybody knew that Alvin Kamara was going to be this type of special player. And if they did, I mean, he would have been a first-round pick. Same thing. Like, that's what we're talking about Daryl Henderson here. And that's not a knock. It's just we always have to make sure our expectations are appropriate for these guys. So right now, is he the number four running back off the board in rookie drafts? Yes. Is he the breakout running back of 2019? I don't think we should be thinking that. Don't think we should be thinking that. But I like him. And I like his role in that offense. I like the fit in the offense. There's a lot to like there. Just let's pump the brakes a little bit. By the way, just a real quick note here too. Dontrell Inman signed to the Patriots. That's a good landing spot for him. We'll just keep an eye on him in deeper leagues. And the NFL did suspend Patrick Peterson for 6 games for violating the PED policy. So a quick prediction here. Patrick Peterson will not be shadowing in the first 6 weeks of the season. That's a little sneak peek of the PFF wide receiver cornerback matchup chart. All right, that is going to wrap things up for us on the show today. Of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Jeff Ratcliffe and use the hashtag RatPack. I see you, RatPack, on there. That way I know you're a listener of the show. Of course, go check out ProFootballFocus.com. Lots of goodies up there right now, including some good gambling content in addition to all the fantasy goodies, your dynasty, your best ball, all of that up there right now. We'll be back soon with another edition of the podcast. So for Pro Football Focus, I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and you know what? I'm out of here.